The 20th of April. Eruption of Vesuvius. Convolutions of cloud, scrimmages of brains that had broken out of an underground academy of giants trying to think for themselves, struggling to free themselves from subterranean repressions. But clouds and brains are of an underlying oneness, struggle soon relapsed into a general fogginess. Volcanic or cerebral, the products are obscurities. Naples was in darkness. The people of Naples groped in the streets, each in a hellish geometry of his own, each seeing in a circle, a few yards in diameter, and hearing, in one dominant roar, no minor sounds more than a few yards away. Streams of refugees were stumbling into the streets of Naples. People groped in circles, into which were thrust hands, holding up images, or clutching loot. Fragments of sounds in the one dominant roar, geometricity in bewilderment or circles in a fog, and something dominant, and everything else crippled. The flitting of feet, shoulders, bandaged heads, cries to the saints, profanity of somebody who didn't give a damn for Vesuvius, legs of a corpse, carried by invisibles, prayers to God, and jokers screeching false alarms that the lava was coming. A blast from the volcano cleared away smoke and fog. High on Vesuvius, a zigzag streak of fire. It was a stream of lava that looked fixed in the sky. With ceaseless thunder, it shone like lightning, a bolt that was pinned to a mountain. Glares that were followed by darkness in an avalanche of bounding rocks and stumbling people, no fugitive knew one passing bulk from another, crashing rocks and screaming women going by in silence, in the one dominant roar of the volcano. When it was dark, there were showers of fire, and then in the glares, came down dark falls of burning cinders. In brilliant illuminations, black rains burned the running peasants. Give me the sting of such an ink, and there'd be running. Somewhere, in the smoke and flames, on the mountainside, fell a sparrow. According to conventional theologians, this was noted. The next day there was another flow down the slopes of Vesuvius. It was of carts that were laden with bodies. Possibly this was overlooked, if attention was upon the sparrow. See data to come, for a more matured opinion. In at least one mind, or quasi-mind, or whatever we think our minds, upon this earth, there was awareness of more than coincidence between flows of meteors in Italy and a volcanic eruption in Italy. In Comptes Rendus, 74-1183, M. Silbermann tells of the meteors in Italy, and the eruption of Vesuvius, and gives his opinion that there was relation. It was a past generation's momentary suspicion. The record is brief. There was no discussion. To this day, no conventional scientist will admit that there is relation. But, if there is, there is also another relation. That is between his dogmas and the slaughters of people. In orthodox terms of a moving earth crossing orbits of meteor streams, to which any one part of this earth, such as the Italian part, could have no especial exposure to meteors so moving, there is no explanation of the repeated arrivals of meteors, especially, or exclusively, in Italy, except this. Night after night after night. Coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. Our unorthodox expression is that it was because this earth is stationary. According to data that have been disregarded about 60 years, it may be that there was a teleportative, or electrolytic, current between a volcano of this earth and a stellar volcano. If we think that a volcano in a land that we call the constellation Orion interacted with a volcano in Italy as Vesuvius and Etna often interact, there must be new thoughts upon the distance of Orion. The one point that every orthodox astronomer would contest, or deride because its acceptance would be followed by acceptance of this book as a whole, is that the glare that seemed to be in Orion, was in Orion. These are the data for thinking that the glare that seemed to be in Orion, was in Orion, which cannot be vastly far away. The glare in the sky, early in the evening of February 4, 1872, was west of Orion, as if cast by reflection from an eruption below the horizon. But, when Orion appeared in the east, the glare was in Orion, and it remained in Orion. At Paris, all beams of light came from Orion, after 8 p.m. Comptes Rendus, 74-385. In England in Orion, Simons Med. Mag. 7-1. In South Africa, the point from which all beams diverged was in Orion, Cape Argus, February 10. An account by Professor A. C. Twining, of observations in the United States, is published in the AMER. Jour. Sci. 3-3-273. This remarkable fact, as Professor Twining calls it, but without attempting to explain, is noted that, from 7:15 in the evening, until 10:15, though Orion had moved 1/8 of its whole revolution, the light remained in Orion. There is no conventional explanation to oppose us. My expression is that the glare so remained in Orion, because it was in Orion. Anybody who thinks that the glare was somewhere between this Earth and the constellation will have to account not only for the fixedness of it in a moving constellation, but for its absence of parallax, as seen in places as far apart as South Africa and the United States. 26. Horses erect in a blizzard of frogs and the patter of worms on umbrellas. The hum of ladybirds in England, the twang of a swarm of Americans, at Templemore, Ireland. The appearance of Cagliostro, the appearance of Professor Einstein's theories. A policeman dumps a wild man into a sack and there is alarm upon all continents of this earth, because of a blaze in a constellation. That all are related, because all are phenomena of one, organic existence, just as, upon August 26, 1883, diverse occurrences were related, because all were reactions to something in common. August 26, 1883, people in Texas excitedly discussing a supposed war in Mexico, young men in Victoria, Australia, watching a snowstorm, the first time in their lives, crowds of Chinese men hammering on gongs, staggering sailors in a vessel, off the Cape of Good Hope. I have data for thinking that, somewhere beyond this earth, and not enormously far away, there was, before these occurrences, an eruption. About August 10, of this year 1883, at various places, appeared afterglows that cannot be traced to terrestrial eruptions. Upon the 13th of August, an afterglow was reported from Indiana, and, 10 days later, from California, Monthly Weather Review, 1883-289. Upon the 21st and 22nd, afterglows appeared in South Africa, Knowledge, 5-418. There was no known eruption upon this earth, by which to explain these atmospheric effects, but there was a disturbance upon this earth, and the circumstances were similar to those in Italy, in April, 1872. The volcano Krakatoa, in Java, was in a state of minor activity. It was not considered alarming. Upon the 25th of August, a correspondent to the Perth, Western Australia, Inquirer C. Nature, 29-388, was travelling far inland, in Western Australia. He was astonished to see ashes falling from the sky, continuing to fall, all afternoon. If this material came from regions external to this earth, it came down, hour after hour, as if to a point upon a stationary earth. An attempt to explain was that there may have been an eruption in some little known part of Australia. In Australian newspapers, there is no mention of an eruption in Australia, at this time, and in my own records, there is only one instance, and that one doubtful, of an eruption in Australia, at any time. I am not here including New Zealand. There was, at this time, no eruption in New Zealand. Krakatoa was in a state of minor activity. Wise men from Batavia, localizing, like the wise men at Vesuvius, in April, 1872, were studying only Krakatoa. Considered as a thing in itself, out of relation with anything else, conditions here were not alarming. The natives were told that there was no danger, and natives Columbia University, or East Side, West Side, New York City or Java believe what the wise men tell them. April 19, 1872, the dust of unknown origin that fell from the sky it preceded, by one day, the eruption of Vesuvius. August 25, 1883, the ashes of unknown origin that fell from the sky. August 26, Krakatoa exploded. It was one of this world's biggest noises, and surrounding mountains doffed their summits. Or, like a graduating class at Annapolis, they fired off their peaks, which came down, as new reefs in the ocean. The bombs that shot out were like meteors. The mountain was a stationary meteor radiant, and shot out Krakatoids. Had the winds gone upward, the new meteor stream would have been also of houses and cattle and people. The explosion shattered shore so that all charts were useless. Krakatoa paused. Early in the morning of the 27th, the Straits of Sunda went up. The units of its slaughters were villages. 95 villages went up, in waves that were 90 feet high, 100 feet high, 120 feet high. From the 95 villages, tens of thousands of humans were recruited, and they went dead into warring confusions. In the gigantic waves, armies of the dead were flung upon each other. There was no more knowledge of what it was all about than in many other battles. Charges of dead men rushed down the waves, and were knocked into rabbles by regiments spouting up from the bottom. Onslaughts of corpses, and in the midst of them appeared green fields that were the tops of palm trees. Raiders in thousands dashed over momentary meadows, and there were stampedes that were as senseless as the charges. Stone clouds were rolling over the conflict. Furies of dead men were calming under bulks of pumice, and slimy palm trees were protruding. The waves were going down under pressures of pumice, 20 feet deep, in places. Battlefields on land have, after a while, turned quiet with graveyards, but change in the Straits of Sunda was of the quickest of mortuary transitions. The waves were pressed flat by pumice. There was a gray slab of stone over the remains of the people of 95 villages. Black palms, heavy with slime, drooped on each side of this long, gray slab.